From her prestigious position as the head of a philosophical school in Alexandria to her violent death in a Christian church, Hypatia of Alexandria's story remains shrouded in mystery, sparking the imagination of writers and poets throughout the 20th century.
Welcome to Sweet Defiance, the podcast where we pair delicious sweets with compelling stories of forgotten historic women who made great achievements in science.
My name is Beatrice, and I'll be your guide to the life and accomplishment of extraordinary individuals.
I am Eva, the scientific mind behind this podcast, bringing expertise and knowledge to uncover the wonders of the natural world. Beatrice, you chose today's drink for us. What is it?
After some intensive research, I found Conditum Paradoxum, which is Latin for paradox spiced wine.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
This is actually coming from an antique recipe book, and you just use white wine, preferably dry wine. Then you add some honey, dates, black pepper, bay leaves, and saffron. So it gets really, really yellow. And you just first you cook it up and then you kind of put it back in the fridge because you should drink it cold.
To our listeners, maybe if you want to imagine this drink before your, well, imaginary eye, it's really very bright, yellowy, orangey. It looks like something that seeps out of a marker for text.
Yeah, it looks a bit toxic, that's true.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Let's try some.
Cheers.
Cheers. Mm. Mm. Wow, this is strong.
I think it's also the black pepper in it, so yeah, it's very spicy.
Oh, I will make this more often. Go on, listeners, make your own summer drinks and send us your pictures.
And tag us on social media and we will reshare your pictures.
Well, let's get on with the episode.
This time for the setting, we're going to go way, way back around 355 BC to Alexandria in Egypt, which was part of the Eastern Roman Empire during her lifetime. However, the Roman Empire was experiencing a gradual decline, weakened by internal decay and under constant threat from external invaders. Simultaneously, the influence of Christianity was on the rise, eventually dominating European culture for several centuries. So by the turn of the 5th century, Alexandria was a vibrant and bustling city. Its population of approximately 500,000 people consisted of a diverse mix of races and languages. There were native Egyptians, Greeks, a significant Jewish community, and many other groups. The city's harbor served as a major hub for maritime trade, and its iconic lighthouse was counted among the 7 wonders of the ancient world. Factories within the city produced various goods, including large quantities of papyrus, linen, and glass. Temples dedicated to the Greek god Poseidon and the Egyptian deity Serapis stood proudly, while a third temple, originally built by Cleopatra for her partner Antony, eventually became the main Christian church known as the Caesareum, which tragically will become an important place in our story. So for several centuries, Alexandria's most renowned complex of buildings stood as the intellectual epicenter of Western civilization, which was called the Museum. This museum represents more of a precursor to a modern-day university. It was an establishment primarily focused on education, research, scholarly pursuits. And its library held allegedly more than 500,000 papyrus rolls, which were destroyed by civil wars and later on by Christian mobs.
So this is the famous library of Alexandria.
Yes, every time I say it, it hurts my heart that it was destroyed. For Hypatia's life, we have very limited information. Her own writings have not survived, or most of them have not survived. It's critical to distinguish between the dramatized legends and the truth. Her remarkable life, tragic demise, and the lack of concrete information about her have served as fertile ground for the creation of novels, stories, poems, and plays. Hypatia has been portrayed in different ways, symbolizing various themes and conflicts. She has been depicted as a champion of science against religious opposition, a symbol of free inquiry in the face of its suppression, and an embodiment of the clash between Greek and pagan culture and an intolerant form of Christianity seeking its eradication. And even if those fictionalized accounts would make for a more dramatic story, today we will aim to approach more of the truth by using the few facts we do have, as well as some recent academic papers based on those facts. While very little is known about Hypatia's mother, her father Theon made a significant impact in history. Theon was a mathematician and astronomer, and also a professor at the museum, aka what we would call a university nowadays, and is recognized as the last recorded lecturer there. It's likely that Hypatia received her scientific education from him.
Hypatia was also the head of one of two dominant philosophical schools in late antiquity, Alexandria versus Athens. Therefore, Hypatia was one of the most prominent philosophers as well as mathematicians of her day, and one of the few women leading a school. Maybe, side note, philosophers, mathematicians, and astronomers were basically the same back in the day. It is believed that Hypatia then conducted lectures in her own residence for a select group of students and also addressed larger audiences in public venues. Both Hypatia and her father also devoted themselves to making classic texts of mathematics and astronomy more accessible to students. That activity took two forms, editing and commentary. Well, what does this mean in our context? Now, like her father, Hypatia copied important scientific works, and this now means copied by hand, and added her own notes and comments to it. Sadly, it was not usual in this era to clearly distinguish between the original work and the new annotations. So they didn't use a different color pen or a different font. It was just also there. And this is one of the reasons why it's very hard to tell which parts are actually comments and annotations and by whom they are. And in addition to that, the oldest primary source that we actually have on her work is a 10th century lexicon. Well, much must have fallen through the cracks in the 500 and plus years between Hypatia's life and the writing of the lexicon. In short, there is a lot of dispute among scholars up to this day about which surviving works can actually be attributed to Hypatia and which parts are hers and which are just copied from somewhere else. Most is lost at any rate. But among the works that Hypatia probably provided commentaries on, two notable ones are the Almagest, which you will hear more about shortly, and the Handy Tables. It is not known that Hypatia or her father Theon conducted research into new topics, however. But we have to see this in context. The political climate in their time, Alexandria, was not an easy one. And Alexandria's museum, which again is this ancient Greek equivalent of a university, was in decline. Through that lens, it's understandable that the focus shifted from research to the preservation of knowledge.
Though it may be tough, it's not impossible to piece together her beliefs. Hypatia ran a successful school with students whose work have stood the test of time. Only few of her own works have survived, and one of them being the commentary by Theon of Alexandria on Book 3 of Ptolemaeus Almagest, an edition revised by my daughter Hypatia the Philosopher. So Eva, now that I managed to speak those words, can you tell us more what it actually means?
The Almagest, which is also known as Syntaxis Mathematica in Latin, which already shows, so there's maths in it, is actually the most popular astronomy textbook in ancient Alexandria. So although it's an astronomy textbook, it goes by a mathematical name. And it has held a significant position and remains one of the most influential scientific works in history. In fact, this impressive piece of technical writing served as the primary guide to astronomy for over 1,000 years and is still considered a key source of knowledge on ancient astronomy. Befitting, its name Almagest is derived from the Arabic title, which translates to the greatest. The Almagest covers various topics, including Aristotle's cosmology, which describes the spherical nature of the heavens with the earth at the center, and which is then surrounded by fixed stars and planets orbiting around it. It also explores the complexities of daily celestial motion, such as the rising and setting of stars, the length of daylight, determining latitude or the points of the sun's highest point in the sky, or the shadows that are cast by sundials during equinoxes and solstices and other observations that depend on the observer's position. So there's basically anything you could observe in the sky. In this day and age, there were explanations and also guides on how to calculate things. And in addition, it also provides detailed descriptions of the movements of the sun, the moon, the planets, and even includes a comprehensive table of star coordinates.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, there's a reason why it was the standard textbook for 1,000 years.
The city's leaders would consult with Hypatia before making important decisions, so she really was an important figure in Alexandria. This gesture not only honored Hypatia herself, but also acknowledged the significance of philosophy, with Hypatia being its prominent local representative. In addition to her intellectual prowess, she was described by Damascius as very beautiful and well-proportioned, quote. Hypatia chose to remain unmarried and devoted herself to a life of celibacy. On her being a woman, Damascius also says that she taught in public, and his casual tone in his writings suggests that this was unusual but not otherwise remarkable, so all her known students were male, though. After the bishop of Alexandria, Theophilus, unexpectedly died, a power struggle erupted for control. Theophilus' nephew Cyril emerged victorious and began punishing those who had opposed him. He closed the churches and he seized properties. On the other hand, the Roman governor known as the prefect, named Orestes, held more tolerant views towards different Christian sects. Orestes and Hypatia developed a friendship and he sought her counsel on significant matters of state. Cyril further increased tensions by closing synagogues, confiscating Jewish property, and expelling some Jews after a Jewish-led massacre. Orestes, prefect and friend of Hypatia, as well as a recent Christian convert, he opposed Cyril's actions and reported them to the emperor. The conflict escalated, leading to a riot in which Orestes was targeted. Orestes had the monk responsible for the riot publicly tortured. Cyril attempted to proclaim this monk a martyr, but Christians in Alexandria disagreed, since the reason was simply violence and not faith. Cyril made efforts to reconcile the two factions, but Orestes rejected his proposed terms. All Alexandria knew that Hypatia was a friend and confidant of Orestes, which proved to be dangerous for her.
Is this now where we have impending doom again?
Yes! So despite Hypatia's widespread popularity, Cyril and his supporters made efforts to tarnish her image and undermine her reputation, so the classics that we've already been through. Rumors circulated accusing Hypatia of obstructing the reconciliation between Orestes and Cyril. Please note that the following description contains depictions of violence that some may find disturbing. Please skip ahead 30 seconds if you want to avoid that. On a fateful day, Hypatia was traveling in her carriage when they were stopped by an angry mob. They pulled her out and dragged her to the Caesareum, where they stripped her naked and brutally tore Hypatia apart. According to Socrates, she was beaten with roofing tiles or oyster shells, and Damascus describes how the mob gouged her eyes out while she was still barely alive. The tragic event most likely took place in March 415, aligning with the estimated birth year of around 355, makes her approximately 60 years old at her time of death. Hypatia's murder shocked the empire, as she was a beloved figure. Philosophers had long been regarded as immune to public violence in Roman cities, making the murder of a female philosopher by a mob deeply unsettling and destabilizing. While no concrete evidence directly implicated Cyril in her murder, there was widespread belief that he had ordered it, or at least fueled the smear campaign against her that led to her demise. Alarmed by Cyril's actions, the Alexandrian Council sent a delegation to Constantinople and launched an investigation to determine Cyril's involvement in the tragedy.
Funnily enough, Cyril's involvement was not clear, well, probably until this day, and I found some amazing book titles from books from 17-something which exemplify this. So the first book title goes, Hypatia, or The History of a Most Beautiful, Most Virtuous, Most Learned, and Every Way Accomplished Lady who was torn to pieces by the clergy of Alexandria to gratify the pride, emulation, and cruelty of their archbishop, commonly but undeservedly styled Saint Cyril. Well, so this is maybe not the most objective of all book titles. And then there was a second book from 1721, which goes a bit into the opposite direction and clearly cites the first book, which goes, "History of Hypatia, a most impudent schoolmistress of Alexandria, murdered and torn to pieces by the populace in defense of Saint Cyril and the Alexandrian clergy, from the aspersions of Mr. Towland by Mr. Lewis." So people continued to quarrel about the reasons of her death and who's to blame.
According to Damascius, Cyril reportedly escaped severe punishment by bribing one of Theodosius' officials. Hypatia had played a pivotal role in keeping Orestes and Cyril's opposition intact, and her absence led to a rapid collapse of this opposition. By the early 420s, Cyril had established his dominance over the Alexandrian Council.
To conclude, we would like to quote a tiny bit from Hardy Grant's "Who's Hypatia? Who's Hypatia do you mean?" And he writes, "Hypatia mastered all of the mathematics and mathematical astronomy that came down to her. Her work as editor and commentator made classic texts more accessible to students, and her lectures helped to keep alive Plato's old vision of mathematics as a precious stepping stone to the highest knowledge and truth. Beyond all that, Hypatia wins our admiration by her learning, her passion for philosophy, her eloquence, her civic spirit, above all, the great gift for teaching that her students' love attests. Together, these attainments ensure for her a lasting place among history's accomplished and interesting people."
You can find our sources in the show notes. If you enjoy the show and want to help us grow, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
In addition to an intellectual...
Truth.